When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifices. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. Now, what I'm talking about, our fucking game. I want him talking about us. All right, enjoy your lunch.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Happy New Year, everyone.
And our tactics guy and a man who spent all of 2024 researching our new centre-back signing. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
That's me.
Hard at it already, straight in the new year. Spurs seemingly going to get a deal done early. Bardi, you were sceptical about it. It looks like they're going to prove you wrong.
I told them to get it done. They had a word. The lengths Tottenham Hotspur will go to make me look like an idiot is it's amazing. It never ceases to amaze me.
Lovely stuff. Yeah, Happy New Year to all of our listeners. Hope you had a great break, or are still having a great break in some cases. A couple of little shout outs. Firstly, lovely email from David Robinson of Houston Spurs. So thank you so much for that. Thanks also to the following for their emails. Tony McLaughlin, Caleb Bender, Zach Frank, Josh Emden, Mark Bird, Adrian Clift, Keith Stahl, Neil Rutherford, Oliver Bramley, Phil Krebs, Ian Gamble, Alexander Nathan, Gianni Nico Cinelli, Matthew Hooton, and Rick Kay. Thank you all so much. Really appreciate all the correspondence we get at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. It's really nice to read your emails, and of course, your questions really help when putting together the podcast running order. So that's great and hugely appreciated. I've got two matches to talk about. We've got transfers to talk about. We've got the Burnley FA Cup match to talk about. So much going on with Spurs at the moment. I think we should probably start with the two matches, though. And best, I think, to go with the most recent, because it's freshest in our memories, and that is the Bournemouth game. And it was an interesting match. I think that the word that I would use to describe our performance in this match is resilient. I thought there were a lot of positive qualities on display for Spurs, albeit it was a struggle at times. Bardi, how did you feel going into the Bournemouth match, especially after having lost to Brighton?
I mean, they really were the form team for us to play. It was really a bad time to play them. And I was concerned.
They're good,
about
aren't
it.
They?
I was concerned Bournemouth about it. It was almost like we're going to face like a Brighton-like kind of thing. A team that would cause us problems. So I was very concerned about it. And Spurs love playing a striker in form. And Solanke, my God, that boy is hot at the moment. So yeah, I was concerned.
Yeah, Nathan, I mean, obviously, I think that we probably all agree that Bournemouth look a really good team. The manager's doing really good things. Solanke is in incredible form. I mean, Solanke's just a good player. And I'm really glad that he's starting to prove that now at the highest level. It's taken him a while, but it's really coming together for him. But they have options all over the pitch. And their bench was really strong as well. They had a much stronger bench than we did.
Including Tottenham fan Alex Scott, eh?
And reported previous Tottenham target, of course. And Semenyo, who I am a big fan of, on the bench as well. I was quite pleased to see him on the bench, but obviously when he came on, I was a bit kind of worried about the impact that he might have. Mason, any thoughts on how the game went?
So just on who came on for Bournemouth, also Max Aarons came on and played, was it Richarlison on side by like 15 yards for no reason, completely way off his inner max. Yeah. Anyway, what was your question?
Max Aarons really is a blast in the past, isn't he? Do you remember when we were all, get Max Aarons in? Well, a few of us were.
But yeah, I wasn't. I never thought he was that good. But Spurs fan base on the whole desperately wanted to sign Max Aarons for about 4 years. And now he's on Bournemouth bench, bless him. Yeah, Nathan, I was just saying, how did you feel the game went? Did you have any thoughts specifically on this one?
Yeah, I because when we played Bournemouth last time, right, obviously Bournemouth weren't, they didn't quite have things together with their pressing game, and that's come on for them since. But we approached it quite similarly both times. Bournemouth approached it quite similarly both times in that Bournemouth set up to use their centre forward to divide the pitch in half. And then when the ball is on, you know, with one of the centre backs as opposed to the other, they can then sort of arrive man to man as the pass is made. And in both occasions, we lent on our 1v1 ability to manipulate that situation to our advantage. And in the first game, we were doing that with Van de Ven, Bissouma, Udogi, Madison. And in this game, we were doing it with, you know, Davies, Royale, Bentancur. And so it wasn't quite as good. but I think that we had certainly moments of success, right? And I think there's a lot of similarities between the two games we're going to talk about today in that against Bournemouth, against Brighton, early game, we came out pretty hot and we did all right. Yep. Through the middle periods, the opposition were all over us and their pressing game shut us down. Our pressing game dropped off. And then late game, we rallied and went for it. Both times we made... definitely in the Bournemouth game, we made a tactical adjustment and brought... Again, we did a classic thing we've been doing, which is bring Højbjerg in to create more of a midfield two. And I do think that disrupted Bournemouth's press a little and opened up the pass from the centre-back to the winger by... Mm-hmm. by we played more narrow, so Bournemouth had to play more narrow, and therefore there's the direct pass out wide, right? But I also think that maybe more significantly, or at least as significantly, is because we had another player deeper, we were slightly better at winning the second ball when we played long, because for a hell of a lot of the game, we were playing the ball long and losing the second ball to Bournemouth. And again, yeah, quite similar to with Brighton. Sorry, I appreciate I'm jumping all over the place. Brighton did what Man City did to us, which is they pressed in a diamond shape, a 4-4-2 diamond. And so the idea is that when we build with our two centre-backs and a number six, that matches up with their two forwards and their number 10. And again, what we did against Man City is we then dropped another midfielder in alongside, and then we had a 4-3 in the first phase of play against Man City. We tried to do that against Brighton, and Brighton's number six, Billy Gilmore, just followed Lo Celso or Sarr all the way up the pitch, meaning that they were putting up an incredibly, incredibly aggressive and committed press. And we didn't take advantage of it. We didn't feel equipped to take advantage of it in that game.
Until the latter stages when it was already gone.
Yeah, because, and I think that that's when Brighton have gone, well, we've got like a 3-4 goal lead, so we're tired, so we'll drop off now. And that allowed us into the game rather than really a tactical or positional tweak. So it'll be interesting if when we've got a stronger 11, more press resistant players to play, how we adjust to a team going really all out to press in like essentially a 4-2-4 against us, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, and there were some really interesting individual matchups in these two matches. Obviously, I mean, probably three of the highest pressing teams in the Premier League, Spurs, Brighton, and Bournemouth at the moment. And in our case, in particular, players playing with a lot of fatigue, players who haven't just played every game. A lot of them have played every minute of every game, and it's really telling. And I think the Brighton game was a story of fatigue to me. And I think Ange pretty much said the same post-match. Yeah. You know, some of these guys, God bless them, have not had a minute off, let alone a game off. I'm thinking about Porro in particular, but Son as well. He barely ever comes off. He looks absolutely exhausted. And now he goes off to the Asian Cup where he'll play many more games, and that is not ideal. But really, two really interesting performances and matchups. And I honestly think that we weren't that different in the, between the two matches. Things just went our way in one and didn't go our way in the other. Like against Brighton, we conceded a couple of penalties and Estupinan smashes one into the top corner. Against Bournemouth, we kind of ride our luck a bit with the way the ball bounced in the box, and then we took our chances, whereas against Brighton, we failed to.
Also, Vicario was absurd through both games, right?
He is in the most ridiculous string of form. Bardi, I want to come to you because you've been sitting there very patiently. In the Bournemouth game in particular, I thought we started well. And I thought in that early period, Udogi and Saar in particular were really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, we started both games pretty well. And unfortunately, things just turned against us. But it was nice to see Bentancur back in there and do a real kind of like a positive movement to cut down that passing and create the goal. And it was a nice little tackle from Lo Celso as well. My biggest concern is we're giving up a hell of a lot of shots at the moment. I mean, I don't remember Spurs giving up that many shots before, especially not against like a team like Bournemouth. So that's a huge worry at the moment. But then against all of that, there is Emerson playing at centre-back. So it's that kind of thing. It was good to get the 3 points out of this game, but hopefully we don't need to see that for too much longer because it's a real concern, the amount of shots. Like you say, eventually Vicario's got to not be Superman and he's going to start letting more goals in.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a very reasonable observation, and I think when that happens we can't suddenly turn on Vicario because the performance levels at the moment are beyond anything that anyone could expect.
Yeah, and against Brighton it was two, especially the Kulusevski penalty, that was really stupid, and Lo Celso's I think was probably born out of a desire just to go get the ball, but it was a ridiculous challenge. Yeah, so I think the big difference between the two games is where we could like punch ourselves in the face against Brighton we did, and against Bournemouth we rode our luck, and ultimately Sonny scored a beautiful goal and we were just a bit more clinical. But when Richarlison missed that chance at 1-0, I was concerned that the game might turn on that, but it didn't. And these games will just become a footnote, you know, a footnote in the kind of the history and the story of Postecoglou.
I completely agree. I want to pick up on the point you made about conceding a lot of shots because we've had a lot of questions about the centre-back. This was sent by Kiesel after the Brighton game. He says, I love Ange and I love the football and results this season, but in what world is Royale a better centre-back than Dier? Dier was admittedly poor last season, making many bad errors and often running backwards, failing to make a tackle or jockey properly. Royal, though, was such a bad right-back that I think most fans wanted him permanently dropped. Now he's picked in a role that he's neither suited to nor can possibly understand. I understand that Dier isn't for Ange. I get that. But he seems to be cutting off his nose to spite his face by not picking him now. And Petter said, we've all been very concerned about the Royale and Davis partnership and we've shipped quite a few goals with it. But I'm trying to think of any goals caused by outright mistakes by the central defenders and they have been few, if any. Has the main impact of Romero and Van de Ven's absence been offensively slower build-up, not so high line, and our defensive issues caused by a makeshift midfield, failing in build-up and giving away too many turnovers? If it's okay, I'd like to have a stab at responding to those first. I think on Dier, I do get it. I completely get why Ange has gone for Royale over Dier, because we know Dier's leaving. He's made it clear that he wants to leave at the end of the season or before if he can. He tried to leave in the summer. He's running down his contract. And so it would be reasonable for Dier to have checked out somewhat at this point and for him not to be, you know, putting his all in training or whatever. Also, Emerson Royale is one of the most committed players you're ever likely to have. He's the man tries like few other players try. He's such a hard worker. He's a lovely, exuberant character. His teammates love him. I imagine Ange really enjoys his personality. And you know he's tenacious, but I have been really frustrated by the selection of Emerson Royale over Dier, even with the lack of pace of Dier on the running back towards goal thing. But I think personally the reason for the number of shots we're conceding is because Royale can't play centre back. I think his performance against Brighton at centre back is one of the worst Spurs centre back performances I've seen for many years, and that's not his fault. He doesn't play centre back. He hasn't chosen himself there. I blame Ange for this. But with Van de Ven and with Romero, what you get is this proactive snuffing out of chance creation before it even becomes chance creation. They're so on it. They're so on the front foot. They anticipate so well that they stop things before they even become a glimpse of an idea. And what we see with Emerson Royal and to some extent Ben Davis, who I think has done well, but I think this applies to him as well, they're so reactive. It's with Emerson Royal in particular, it's so reactive. He's waiting for things to happen so that he can then decide what to do and how he handles those situations, rather than assertively going and snuffing out things. And again, like I say, that's not his fault. It's not the player he is. He's not a centre-back. Even when he plays right-back, he plays in this reactive way. He loves a tackle, but he's always waiting for the ball to come into the player to then go in for the tackle. Whereas Romero's there. He's stopping the ball getting anywhere near the player in the first place. And it does make a huge difference. And I think we ended up sinking deeper and deeper as a result, and putting ourselves under a lot of pressure. Both teams had a lot of touches in the box, but especially Brighton. And I personally think that is the key reason for why we've conceded a high shot volume. And I think as soon as we get another centre-back in, I think things calm down a lot. And I think we'll notice a big difference.
I agree with pretty much everything you said there about Dier and Royale. It's not like they're booting the ball in their own net, or they're tripping up players and they're being the direct result, the direct cause of a goal we conceded. But I just think the general positioning is allowing opportunities to almost be created. And there was one, a couple of times, Bournemouth just went long and Emerson and Davies would totally misjudge the header, or they'd go for the header and not win it. Or Royale would just kind of flick it to the wrong place. There's so many instances where a situation doesn't even arise because Romero or Van de Ven or a defender of higher quality just shuts it down. I think what you get with Dier is perhaps you get this guy who can win a header here and there, but I think you get way less reactivity. So he's nowhere near as proactive. So Davies, Royale and Dier, neither of them are proactive, but the difference is Royale and Davies have some form of reaction, have some form of ability to get back and recover. Whereas Dier has no recovery. He goes for a night out. He's done for five days.
The thing that I think Dier has over Royale though is the positioning, and Royale's positioning was honestly, I was watching some of his positions against Brighton, thinking, has he even trained at centre back before? I mean, obviously he's not played there because it's not his role, but it looked like a fish out of water at times. It was better against Bournemouth, which shows that he's learning and growing, which is good. But that's what Dier has. But it's a toss-up as to which is better, because obviously Royale has the recovery pace, like you say. Nathan, anything you want to add?
One more thing, and every set piece is a madness with Royale and Davies in there. Perhaps Dier would be better, but then I've always said the space behind Dier is where I would like to live. So I don't think so. Get the big Romanian chap in and let's start smacking some headers out of there.
Who was it who just... It was a few weeks ago now. A team that we played quite well against, but they just obliterated us on set pieces. Villa would be the example of that game. But like, I think I feel fairly differently on this. So first of all, just on Dier versus Royale, I think it's pretty much entirely about mobility and not really about anything else, to be honest. Which is, again, not to make out that, like, I'm happy with Emerson Royale playing centre-back for us long-term. That's just the state that we're in due to injuries and lack of depth and suspensions and fatigue and everything else. But fatigue, I think, is the main issue for us defensively as a whole. Like, the reason that we've allowed Bournemouth to have, like, a 35-minute period of the game where they're dominating possession, dominating territory, dominating shots, is not really due to our centre-backs. Again, defensively imperfect. I guess probably more importantly, their offensive limitations are what puts us into that position, right? So they're both decent ball players, but they're not Van de Ven and Romero, right? They're not super safe with it, basically. I think due to our sort of compounding fatigue issues, the fact that we are struggling to keep up our intensity at the moment we're doing sort of a 20-minute period at the start of the game and a half an hour period at the end of the game. That's been the pattern the last two. I think if we had Romero and Van de Ven in, we'd still be having those periods where we're dropping off. And I do accept that Van de Ven allows the pressure because of his incredible recovery pace, but I think there's fatigue in the front line. Like, Richarlison looks tired, and he is someone who just is wild with how much intensity he plays with all the time, you know? He's an absolute pressing monster. So I don't think it's our quality or depth at centre back that is allowing oppositions into games at the moment. It's just another factor.
Interesting. I think we're playing deeper as a result of having these two at centre back. I think we're also just not backing up our press as effectively. I think they're nervous to do so because they don't have the proactive game reading abilities as our first choice centre backs, and I think that it all falls down because of that. When our opposition teams are playing the ball forward early, I think it's because they know that we're weak at centre back. They know we can be got at. And we're seeing lots of, against Brighton in particular, we saw loads of balls played in behind for essentially all of their front three to run onto. And we're terrified. And Porro, I thought, looked really slow on the recovery several times against Brighton, which I think is a sign of fatigue because Porro is not a slow player.
You know who wasn't slow on the recovery? Udogi, who saved about four goals just with incredible recovery runs.
So good against Bournemouth. I mean, he is incredible.
Yeah.
He is an incredible player because not only did he do that, not only did he save the day three or four times, sweeping back across, but he also was a real threat going forward as well. And it's not just him being a direct threat. It's his movement creates space for others. He's so intelligent off the ball. Oh, God. I need to do a deep dive into where he learned to play football because there's something special with this boy.
He's Italian. We're born with that ability to defend and play football. That's where it is.
Well, defend, but...
Bardi, your boy Sarr scored a lovely goal against Bournemouth. Really, really nice finish into the far corner. It kind of just opened up for him. I was screaming at my screen, pass, 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 and then he took that extra touch, moved it wide, and it opened up the left side of the goal, and he picked out the corner beautifully, and he has just signed a new contract until 2030.
I'm so happy. I really, really like him. I've had a thing for him for a while. I was in Milan when Conte played him and Skip in centre midfield, and he looked good, and I thought Conte was going to play him some more, but he didn't. He put the Viking straight back in. So it's really great that Postecoglou's put so much faith in Sarr. And I think he's delivered, man. He's scored, what, two goals this season? I think he's been a little bit overworked. He's played with a ramshackle midfield around him, but he's great. And is he going to the Africa Cup of Nations? His injury is not too serious, is it?
Okay, so
good. I'm glad because he looked really distraught at that. And even though I don't want him to go, I don't want him to miss out. I really like him, and I'm delighted that we've signed him and Destiny on long term deals.
We way overperformed our expected teenagers going off the pitch in tears in this game.
Yeah, I mean, when's that ever happened before? So presumably it was because of the threat of missing the African Cup of Nations.
Yeah, man.
Valise, I guess, either knows he's got a really bad injury, or maybe he thought he was going to get the start against Burnley and is just devastated.
Yeah, his pain threshold is just really low.
He looks in a bad
like
way.
His kneecap had come loose, so like that sounds pretty painful. Man.
Your boy Højbjerg playing him through when he's only got one leg as well. When the pass was the other side, someone added me on Twitter and said, please mention this in the pod. So there you go.
I honestly don't know what went through his mind. Like, how could he have missed that Valise was down for that long and was limping heavily? It was so, and it wasn't even like the most sensible pass anyway.
Maybe. I think there's a case that you play it to Valise so that he can play it to Son.
Yeah, I guess.
I tweeted a screenshot of it last night, and people are upset that I'm being incredibly mean to Højbjerg. But to be honest, it's funny. it's funny that he would do that, you know.
Højbjerg is a meme at this point. A lot of Spurs fans are over him completely, and it's best for all parties if he moves on. Having said that, I thought he was one of the only players against Brighton that actually showed up, and I thought he was really good when he came on against Bournemouth for the reason that you said, Nathan. I think the tactical switch that Postecoglou made was a masterstroke. Skip, when he came on for Sarr, was a complete mess. About his first five involvements were horrendous, and then we brought Højbjerg on and moved to a double pivot. And there were three benefits of that. Firstly, I think it really helps Skip settle into the game to have someone close to him and working in tandem with him. Secondly, I thought Højbjerg just added a degree of control to our midfield. And thirdly, it pushed Lo Celso further forward, where he was brilliant. I thought he really excelled as the sort of freer 10 in the latter half of the Bournemouth game. He was dribbling, he was creative passing, he was snapping into tackles. And he looked shot at the end as well. Understandably, he's not played much football. He looked absolutely gassed when he finally came off. But I was really, really pleasantly surprised by Lo Celso again. He's done well. We got this question from Alan Clark. He said, I only watched it on Twitter, but the Bournemouth game looked a lot like we got outplayed and hit them on the break twice in the second half. Given this was against a mid-table team at home, is this the birth of Angonio Postecoglou?
Angonio. I think you'd probably go Angonio.
Angonio. Yeah, I like that. What do you reckon, Nathan? It was
a little Conte, this game. Or certainly periods.
Maybe that's why I liked it so much.
but you know, the good period where we actually got our counters off at all. But then you got the rally at the end. That's very Conte. Both games again. I guess suggests a tiny bit of merit to the idea that it was the players all along, except that we've also seen even these players play some pretty exceptional football this season, maybe in more preferred positions or surrounded by other players. Or, you know, just for the opening 20 minutes of the game before they get tired, right? It kind of is what it is at the moment. We know that what we can do and what we'll hopefully be back to with some more depth and so on later on in the season, with some more players in and some players back from injuries and suspensions. Yeah, decent counters though, to be fair. Like, it's not like there's not been any practice of counters, but then the way that we counter is very similar to the way that sometimes we just play our possession game fast, so it's all the same really.
Yeah, some really, really nice counter-attacking. I thought Johnson was very impressive in the Bournemouth game. I really liked his choice of crosses. I thought he struggled against Brighton, but came back strong against Bournemouth for me.
So I think basically the difference between the two performances there is that, like, in the Brighton game, he received the ball our side of the opposition defence, whereas maybe in the Bournemouth game he received the ball more often through the other side of the opposition defence. And basically he's two different players in those situations. He really lacks any kind of confidence to take his man on, or
when it's just a pure race.
When it's a straight foot race. But if he's got the ball to his feet already and the player's ahead of him, he doesn't try to invent a foot race that he could then win, right? Which is a shame, because I feel like he could potentially do that.
The Gareth Bale thing.
He did it against City. So he did it against Kyle Walker, of all people. So if you can beat Kyle Walker in a foot race, mate, you know, give Max Aarons a go, I guess. He frustrates me, I think, when there's a defender in front of him, because, he's not trying to take him on, but he's also not trying an aggressive pass. He's not trying to create room or whatever. He just looks to lay off the ball and therefore sort of responsibility as soon as possible, because I described him the other day on Discord as like a wide poacher, a fox outside the box. He's here in the squad for goals and assists, and he's not going to do a lot else. And when he doesn't get a goal and assist, he's going to frustrate us, which is interesting because, like, kind of playing two and a half players like that in the team at once is it's a bit heavy on that end. I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to shit all over Brennan Johnson, because he's definitely a good player and he will get goals and assists, but we sure paid a hell of a lot of money and a homegrown spot for a player who won't really affect the play except for when he's through. But when he's through, he's good. Lovely cross again, that same cross for Johnson.
I think the thing about Johnson is he gets the ball so little that it's almost like when he gets it, we're expecting it. We're asking him to do a lot. So, like, only Richarlison has the ball less than Johnson. And it's almost like if he doesn't do that cross or tap in at the back post, it's pretty much he hasn't been involved at all in the game. And I don't know if we can keep carrying somebody like that. I think perhaps we can do it with the centre forward, but we can't do it. Even Sonny, now he's moved wide, is getting the ball more and doing more things. Perhaps they're not brilliant, but he's still a little bit more involved. Yeah. I just don't think Johnson's not, what's the word, decisive. In those 20 times he has the ball, he's just not decisive enough to make a real impact. So he's got time to grow, but he is. It was a lot of money on a player not that decisive.
I just think He'll always be a really useful tool in the squad, because there'll always be occasions where, like, oh, you know, their left back or their right back is positioning quite aggressively, and we're playing through the press occasionally. Let's get Brennan Johnson on, because he'll get behind and he's good for goals and assists in that situation. But, and of course, this is not his fault in any way, I sure wish we had in the squad a player who would create from situations where he receives defeat more often.
And that's why I've been a bit frustrated that Iago Santiago hasn't been involved a bit more, because I think he could be that player. Like, he has been that player for the under-21s. Yeah. And yet when he's been on the bench, he's not even had the odd 5 minutes here to see if he can sort of compete physically.
Do you think that physicality is the issue for him, that he's just not going to be sort of as fast or intense enough for this level of football? Or is it more the fact that because he's older now, he's just seen as not having a development plan aligned to elite football?
I just think Ange is a bit reticent to use young players. I think it's...
Use Donnelly a bit.
He's barely used Donnelly. Like, Donnelly's played a second, essentially. Feliz, he's played more. He was a signing. I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? Like, this is the way it happens with youth development at Spurs. If you sign them, they get to play. If they come through the academy, they more often than not don't.
I get that.
It's a frustration for me. I think there are other young players he's used as well. So Brian Hill is, I think it's fair to say, still a young player. And he has come on and he has been used. Pat Matassar is a young player. He's been used. But they're all ones who've had experience elsewhere. And I think it's very normal for coaches to only play the ones that have had experience and not use the other ones, and to not be the ones to give them their first chance. And for me to expect anything different is probably asking a bit too much in the context of Premier League football. But given the injury crisis, I found it frustrating.
Yeah, I think for a start, I think a significant amount of our best young talent is already out on loan, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? And then you've got Donnelly, who is behind, like, Madison, then Kulusevski, then Lucelso for his role in the team. And then the two centre-backs, both of whom, again, I like, I just think aren't ready. Phillips is not ready on the ball. Dorrington is not ready off the ball. And if they came in and dropped a disaster class, that's really negative for their development, right? I definitely get what you're saying on a larger scale, especially when we look beyond just Postecoglou, but I feel like the situation at the moment, you can kind of explain each and every one of them individually.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, I probably at this stage rather see Santiago than Hill.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Really? So you've not been impressed by Brian's cameos?
I've been really disappointed with Brian's cameos. And like I was saying, Conte needs to play him a lot last season. And I thought, you know, he's the right profile to play, the Ange ball winger, but he's just not. And he hasn't seen a ton of the pitch, but he's just not done anything. He's tried.
That's so interesting. I've really felt like he's done stuff when he's come on. I felt like he's really made a difference in both games. Obviously, he missed a sitter. You know, the moment where Højbjerg, Twinkle Toes Højbjerg, dances through to a touchline and puts in a perfect cross. It's on a plate for Hill. All he has to do is head it into the net and he hits the bar.
Oh, man.
But I feel like Hill has, for me, like, he's not always... he's not always, like, directly achieving things. He's not always, like, the one to put in a cross. But I feel in both games, he's come on and added, like, a real tenacity. He's increased the tempo of our performance. And critically for me, I think he's linked better with Udogie than Son has in either game. I think Hill is a relational player. He's, like, someone who can't do it by himself. He plays quick football with others who are close by him, and Udogie is the same, and I feel like they've got quite a nice little understanding that's worth keeping an eye on.
I guess the thing there is that I'm looking for Hill to do things on his own, and as you say, he's looking to link up with someone else. I want him to, you know, take his man on, basically.
I see him, like, obviously not in the same quality, but I see him more of a, like, Bernardo Silva type player than a
Spanish winger.
Exactly. I see him as a Spanish winger. Exactly. Yeah, that was an interesting little aside on Brian Hill there, because I do you think there's been some positive things from his cameos? Let's quickly talk about the Burnley game, because I think it'll be interesting. Bardi, are you expecting, given the state of our squad at the moment, much, if any, rotation?
I don't think we can rotate that much. I'm going to the game, and I hope we don't start Forster. I hope we go reasonably strong in this game, because I would like to progress through it, and I think it's important that we do progress through it. I just don't think we've got enough options. Perhaps we'll see Donnelly, maybe. Perhaps Hill will start in front of, Son is gone. Son won't be there, will he?
Yeah, Son won't be there.
So I guess we'll see Hill, Richarlison and Johnson up front. I don't think.
Or he could play Kulusevski, because he'll be back from suspension.
But I would like us to go as strong as possible, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think I agree. I was looking back at the team selection for the EFL Cup match against Fulham, and it was Forster, Emerson Royal, Sanchez, Van de Ven, Davis, Skip, Højbjerg, Lo Celso, Solomon, Richarlison and Perisic. And frankly, a bunch of those players are no longer rotation options. They are playing, they're having to play as our first teamers. So the option to rotate just isn't really there, unless you think it's going to be, like you say, Hill, maybe Donnelly. I don't think there's going to be too many changes.
What's quite amazing from that starting lineup there is that they were hopeless against Fulham. They had no idea idea what they were doing. But I actually think that starting lineup now would be better than it was then. I think there has been some improvement amongst the players, especially. So I think if we were to play that team now, we would be, this is all right. That's probably our best starting lineup that we would have fielded in the apart from Forster. Put Vicario in, and we all would have been reasonably happy with that against Brighton and against Bournemouth. It's incredible. Some of these players have been on quite a little journey recently.
For sure.
Davinson Sanchez, though.
He's better than Royale at centre-back, and I think he's better. Come on, you've got to give him that.
On the ball, though, he killed us in that game.
Those players have improved. There's been a journey for some of those players.
Yeah, that's what continued game time and playing around some better players does to them. But also, Davinson Sanchez would be killing us right now. If he was in the squad and therefore probably playing, he'd be killing us right now.
I'd be right.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's not the passing ability, is it? It's the calmness in possession. Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think Ange centre-backs aren't really asked to pass that much. They don't really do a great deal of, like, creative passing. They just...
Romero does,
but they don't have to, is what I'm saying. They can kind of just punch the ball into midfield and get away with that. But the key, the critical key, is similar to what Vicario has. It's the calmness on the ball. It's the willingness to wait for the moment to suck your man into you and then play the pass.
This is a significant point of contention in my Dragusin scouting at the moment.
Oh, really?
Thinking through this process, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, well, before we talk Dragusin, Bardi, I believe you have a question.
Can you guess who I am? I'm a former Liverpool, Blackburn and Aston Villa player who played 50 games for Spurs. One of the highlights of my club career was actually beating Spurs in a cup final in 2002. Who am I?
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Liverpool, Blackburn and Aston Villa.
I have more clues.
I'll take another clue.
Nathan, do you need another clue?
Oh, I think I've got it. It's Brad Friedel.
It's Brad Friedel. Well done, Windy.
Oh, wow.
Brad Friedel, who went on to become the oldest
the oldest player to represent Spurs in the Premier League in 2012.
What were the other clues?
That was my next clue. And then I was going to go, I'm a goalkeeper. And then I was going to really bring it in and say, I'm American, just in case we hadn't got there by then.
Friedley in for the cup game versus Burnley, I reckon that's the way.
I mean, Forster and Friedley aren't too dissimilar. Frankly, like, massive hands, make some good reactive saves, absolutely shocking on the ball.
Love their line. They love standing on the chalk.
Yeah, for sure. Harry Raymond says, who's your pick for captain for the next two games? Because obviously Son is our captain. He's now at the Asian Cup. Madison and Romero are vice captains. They are both crocked. So we're down to bare bones in terms of the armband as well as the team selection. Who do you think will be in contention for captaincy, Bardi, for the Burnley and games after that?
There is only one correct answer to this, and it is Gentle Ben takes the captaincy. Longest serving player at the club. Good, nice guy. Tactically astute. Give it to him.
Been really pleased with Davies' performances, but also, again, all the things we talked about before in terms of the space behind and how that might affect our play are relevant concerns. But in terms of what he can do, he's done it very well. In fact, I posted his Polar on Twitter last night, and he's statistically significantly better at progressing the ball with his passes and carries than Van de Ven has been this season, whereas Van de Ven is much, much, much safer and secure and better under pressure, right?
That doesn't surprise me, actually.
Not too shocking. I guess the only thing with Davies is that maybe Van de Ven will be back soon, and then Davies will be back at the team. So then who would you go to? Vicario?
Or Bentancourt, maybe?
Yeah, sure.
I obviously don't know what their personalities are like. We're judging by how they seem to be on the pitch.
Body language.
Body language and their interviews with Milesy. So who knows what they're actually like as people. But Bentancourt seems like a pretty articulate and passionate, but generally fairly calm footballer. I'd be fine with him being captain for a couple of games.
Yeah.
I was very happy to see him back, by the way.
We haven't talked about him sort of mysteriously turning up in the lineup, because like there was no talk of it. He wasn't in the matchday squad for Brighton, and then his wife, is it, posts onto Instagram a heavily blurred screenshot from a group WhatsApp conversation in which someone says L30 is back today, and I think that basically every Spurs fan goes, oh, okay, he's probably, you know, doing treadmill work, cool, and then he starts.
Just like the man's recovery is insane.
So I'm guessing, because he obviously did some ligament damage, is what the club said, and he must have gone for a scan, and there was probably a lot of noise in the scan, and then we've assumed the worst, which would be like a bad grade 3, or maybe a heavy grade 2, but it turns out it's essentially a minor strain, and he's, you know, gone through his physio and felt it and run on it, and it's felt fine, so they've gone, yeah, probably just a strain, you're good to go. But yeah, the lack of indication was an interesting one. And there is, and someone else pointed this out as well on Twitter, there is definitely a bit of a theme here of Postecoglou and the club giving the pessimistic time frame and then just bringing the player in when they want to bring the player in. And to be honest, I'm surprised more coaches and more clubs don't do that, because Bournemouth will have been preparing their pressing game, assuming that we're playing Skipper Højbjerg as the six, and going, here's where we can create the turnover, here's where we can force them into uncomfortable areas, or here's where we can deliberately invite the pass because we can then cut off the options, we're not worried about what they can do there, things like that. And then Bentancur starts, and that's a factor they won't have been preparing for. The other element, the other benefit of doing things that way is that if there's a setback, you're not disappointing or frustrating the fans. The fans don't go, our medical team are murderers because there's been a minor delay in like injury recovery, which is a very common and normal thing to happen. So I find it strange that more clubs don't do that, to be honest.
I mean, I'm interested that on his return, again, he played as the six, and I'm really keen to see if he carries on playing as a six for Postecoglou, or whether it's just situational.
Did pretty well. Wasn't Bissouma, but he's, you know, hardly played in an entire calendar year. Tried a few, like, first-time no-look round-the-corner balls that were just sort of into an area.
Yeah.
Came off a couple of times, didn't come off a couple of times. I'm guessing that was a premeditated move, but, again, not something that you would really see Bissouma doing. But Yeah, again, the thing for me with Bentancur is that I think that he would be an outstanding number eight.
Me too.
But also, he's the only other player in the squad, in my opinion, who can do the number six role to a sufficient standard. So it is what it is.
Yeah. So let's talk about potential incomings, because I think that ties in quite nicely. It does seem like Radu Dragušin is going to happen, and sooner rather than later. I think what's happened there is it's become really obvious that Todibo won't be leaving in January. Nice aren't willing to sell.
Realise that they're in a title fight and they should probably hang on to their best player.
I mean, the thing is, they're 5 points behind PSG and that'll probably get extended, but maybe it won't, and they'll regret selling their best player. So I get it from their perspective. And if we're not going to make an offer well over and above what they want for him, then they hang on to him until the summer and he goes then. Fair enough. But what I really like is we've done again what we did with Van de Ven and with Vicario, which is we've moved on quickly to our next target and haven't faffed about and waited and just gone back in over and over and over again for Todibo. We've gone, right, he's not happening, let's get Dragušin in. And I really like that new approach. So that's good. It seems like we also want to get in a winger and a midfielder. The winger perhaps is Jota on loan, the former Celtic player who went to play in Saudi and then regretted it. Maybe that'll happen. And the midfielder, we're still being linked with Conor Gallagher, but who knows if he'll actually leave Chelsea in the middle of the season, given that he's their club captain. There's lots of outgoing news as well. Hugo Lloris has gone, Bardi. And obviously Hugo Lloris stayed at Spurs for too long, but how good was he at his best?
It's very sad to see Hugo leave. It's one of those, in my advent calendar, I listed him and I said he'd probably be higher than he actually was, because it's just, you know, sometimes you need a little bit of space to kind of see these players for who they were. And I think right now, especially me, we just keep remembering the Hugo that played bits of last season and threw the ball in. Whereas what we actually forget is we signed this guy from Lyon who was a actual game changer for the Premier League, game changer for goalkeeping. Like he invented the kind of word sweeper keeper, and he was cutting edge, man. He was I don't know what a bit of technology that's cutting edge that isn't like a Betamax or something, which was at the time was incredible, but then quickly got outdated. And our signing of him was, I think it was probably the first time in Spurs' kind of at least Premier League history where we'd signed a goalkeeper that had a bit of longevity towards him. And you know, he's perhaps been here, what, over 10 years? Incredible servant. He made his mistakes, but he made far more good saves than he did mistakes. And it's sad it had to end this way. I think there could have been a cleaner break to this. Perhaps he shouldn't have had his contract extended. Tottenham should have future-proofed this. Tottenham should have signed a young goalkeeper to work with him. And it's sad it's gone like this, but Hugo remains the best goalkeeper at Spurs in my lifetime. And I have nothing but fond memories of him. Now we've got that separation between like him and Vicario. So yeah, it's sad. I wish him all the best. A lovely goalkeeper.
I think you're right. We're remembering mostly the last couple of seasons of Hugo Lloris. And I wonder if perhaps Vicario came in and was merely an average shot stopper, we'd be yearning more for Pete Hugo than we currently are, and therefore it'd be a more emotional farewell. It frustrates me a lot how we exposed him to his decline at this club for the last sort of 2 or 3 years.
Definitely. We made it worse for him, man. We never helped him. He should have had a protege to work with. But perhaps now Tottenham will learn and we'll do things differently, and we'll put in that kind of master-apprentice kind of partnership, especially in something as key as goalkeeping.
Yeah, I do. I definitely feel like we've let him down in a way by not at least allowing him to leave on his terms, on a high, but certainly by not bringing in some competition sooner and kind of slowly easing him out. I mean, it was just a mess. Last year, he was playing way too much, and then it just stopped, and that was it. That was him done. And it was a bit awkward in the summer. He wanted to leave, but then no one wanted him, or no one to the standard he wanted to play at. And now he had to settle with moving to Los Angeles, which I'm sure, you know, is a perfectly good club. I don't know much about Los Angeles FC, but not the level that Hugo wanted to be playing at, given what we saw in the summer, certainly. And it all feels like it's ended a bit sadly, really.
Yeah, well, I think 6 months on the sidelines with no... yeah. European clubs showing interest has probably made him realise where he's actually at now.
There's like a kind of almost parallel here. Like him and De Gea, both, you know, back in the day, excellent shot stoppers, but then just the game has moved on past them. I think what happened to Lloris at Newcastle when he got subbed at half time shouldn't have ended that way. And we really, he shouldn't have started, and it should then just, it's so sad for him. But a great servant who just give us 4 or 5 years of a bit of space, and then he'll come back at Spurs to do the halftime chats, be roundly applauded, and everyone will remember that the fact that he's our best goalkeeper in the last 25 years, 30 years, and if Vicario could go on to kind of hit the levels that that Lloris did, it would be brilliant. Yeah,
for sure. We also have Sergio Reguilón coming back in January from loan at Manchester United. The reporting seems to suggest that he will head out on another loan, that Man U just didn't want to keep him, I guess, because Luke Shaw has returned from injury and they now have Dalot, who's covering sometimes at left back as well. So maybe it's around need for them. Rather than anything to do with his performances in particular, because I think their fans really quite liked him. Judging from the United fans that I know and what I'd read on social media, they were quite keen on him.
They should play Shaw at left centre back and keep Reguilón in the squad, in my opinion. But you know,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, I agree. There's repeated links of Højbjerg leaving, and I do think he'll leave in January. And I think that will then trigger something else in terms of us signing a midfielder, and whether that's Gallagher or not, I don't feel confident enough to say it at this point. But obviously we know Chelsea have significant issues with FFP, and Gallagher only has 18 months left in his contract. So it would seem like a quite opportunistic move. But there's definitely interest, solid interest in Højbjerg, and it comes down to whether Spurs feel they can get a guaranteed deal at the end of a loan, I think, an obligation to buy rather than an option to buy. James says, with us still signing young Juve rejects and bit part players, Bentancur, Deki, Romero, and potentially Dragušin, Illing Jr. and Sule, are you as convinced as I am that Fabio is proving a point to Juve that they should have played his sick players? What do you think, Bardi? Do you think this is just Fabio Paratici proving a point to Juve?
In my detailed knowledge of scouts, which isn't great, I think I think a lot of scouting is dumb. You kind of scout what you know. So I think Paratici going after players that he knows, that he's pre-scouted, that he has some kind of idea on, is for him, it's, you know, he's doing something familiar and safe. So I think if he's already got the work on these guys, he already understands and knows what they have, then I think you tend to go where you feel most comfortable. So I'm all for it, because so far he's not really let us down anywhere, really, in terms of signings.
Yeah, I would agree.
I'm sure he loves being proven right. But yeah, mainly I think his style of scouting, which is, you know, contact orientated, players that he already knows, is definitely a significant way he's going to go. Man, last night I was watching Dragusin's only start under Pirlo, and Kulusevski played in that game, and he was bloody outstanding. What are they playing at, man? What are they like?
Kulusevski?
Hilarious.
Yeah, Kulusevski's a good player, but Allegri's gone at Allegri.
So we also have reporting that our young winger / forward June Soon-Suk Bell is wanted by a bunch of Championship and League One clubs on loan, which sounds like very good news to me. Like, I don't think he I don't see him as one of our absolutely outstanding prospects, but he's certainly a perfectly passable player, and he's had plenty of goal involvements in the under-21s this year. He's done really well in that respect. I think that if we sign Dragušin anytime soon, we also need to find pretty much immediate loans for Phillips and Dorrington, because there's no point in them just being on the bench for the rest of the season. They need games. They need to be playing. They need to be out playing men's football. And I'd say if we get them even League One or League Two loans, then I'd rather them go away and play some football and come back in the summer for pre-season having actually played, you know, 20 odd matches. I think that would be a great thing. There's several other youth players that I think that could go out on loan as well. If he's not going to use Santiago, then we should be looking to get him out on loan. I think Niall John needs another loan. Matthew Craig probably at this point needs a loan. There's several others. So I'm really hoping that Spurs get it together with their youth development pathway over the next year, and I'd love to see that start in January. Any other incoming links you want to talk about, Nathan?
Kind of very focused on Dragushin at the moment. Has there been anyone new in the last since we last recorded?
I don't think so.
I think we should sign Aliso. That's what I've done some scouting, and I think it's a madness not to sign this guy. He's unbelievable.
I already did my Aliso video 2 years ago or something.
I really wanted Aliso before he joined Crystal Palace. I really wanted Alex Scott before he joined Bournemouth. The problem is we tend to wait too long now, and we want the finished player rather than the potential player. And
well, we brought in, you know, Sarr and Udogie, for example. We brought in Veliz.
But what we did with them was what we should be doing with the homegrown players as well. We brought them in and we got them out on loan, and we allow them to continue developing, and then we got them back in the squad for pre-season.
I guess especially with Scott, is that he'd be coming into the Donnelly situation, right, where he's looking to play in the role and behind the pecking order of Maddison, Celso, Kulusevski. Would he have signed? I guess it's his boyhood club. So would he have signed with his boyhood club to then go back out on loan when he could just be a starter for a very good Premier League side? I think Scott comes up again in the future for us, probably.
Yeah, I think so as well.
But we'll be much more expensive because of the chronology of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I watched a couple of championship games this weekend just gone, and there are some really talented young players in the championship at the moment, and I think Spurs should be keeping tabs on several players. Sunderland have got like a plethora of really talented young players. I love Dan Neil, their central midfielder. Jack Clark is obviously an outstanding player.
We've done it again, another episode with Jack Clark mentioned. Yes, he had an incredible assist the other day. Oh, really my good. Goodness.
Really good, really good. Joe Bellingham is looking a good player at Sunderland as well. I think it's a matter of time before someone picks him up. And I watched the Peterborough derby match as well, and I really like Kwame Poku, the Peterborough attacking midfielder winger. He looks a talented player as well, and I had a brief chat with Matt Trevelyan about him, who thinks he's really good. So yeah, it's not just a one game thing for him. He's obviously doing well consistently.
Windy, you would never stop talking about Jack Clark, will you?
I think he's really good. I really like him. I think he's a really good player. Okay, how about this one? This is a question from a little while ago, but I think it's an interesting one. So Paul Maslin says, a year or so from now, how many of Son, Kulusevski, Johnson and Richarlison will be starting regularly for Tottenham? And is it possible the answer will be none of them? There are deficiencies across the board. So this is quite an interesting talking point, given, you know, Son's age, the perceived inadequacies of Richarlison and Johnson. Kulusevski, I would separate out from the others. I think Kulusevski will almost certainly be starting for us in a year from now. I think he's a brilliant player who's just keeps getting better and better. But what do you reckon? Son, Kulusevski, Johnson, Richarlison, which do you think will still be regular starters for Spurs in a year's time?
I would have said one, which would have been Kulusevski. But if you take him out, I would say probably none. I'm pretty sure we will sell Richarlison now. He's starting to score some goals. I think Son will become perhaps more of an impact player. I would like to see that happen. I don't really want to sell him now. I don't think there's much to be gained from that, but I would like to keep him around the club, but start improving and moving on from there. And Johnson, I just don't, what I've seen from him so far, unless he has a massive turnaround, I just don't think he's going to be a starter, but I think he'll be a decent option.
Nathan, obviously you've gone on and on about how you want a 1v1 winger in the squad. I assume that has a big impact on how you will answer this question.
Yeah, I guess starting regularly is an interesting one because, like, all four of those players only start together, I guess, in a situation where Maddison is injured, right? Because otherwise one of them's got to be on the bench. So it's like, I don't know, I think there will be a continuous rotation. I think all of those players are good and useful for the squad and will be still in a year's time. So, you know, whoever we play last game of the calendar year next season, I don't think all four will start, but I think all four will probably still be in rotation, still be seen as tools. Because, yeah, I want us to sign a 1v1 specialist and he's going to take minutes from these four collectively in some way. I want to talk about Maddison for a moment because Kulusevski's really, really impressed, especially in the Newcastle game, playing in a central role. Some ways playing a central role really plays to his strengths and he seems to like it. In some ways, it can limit his time on the ball and affect him negatively in that sense. The Celso just had a really good game. Many people's man of the match against Bournemouth. I think Udogie was better, but that's beside the point. And so we might say, like, does Maddison have any fear for his place? But I think where those two players have been really good, Maddison does more for us in our build-up play than the other two. Again, his ability to recognise which space to move into, receive the ball on the turn, and dictate our game in those deeper positions is what really separates him from the other two. And he has the similar final third brilliance that the other two have as well. I think having Maddison back in the squad will do a hell of a lot for us in every phase of play. Which is why I will also add Lo Celso's name to this list and say we need to sell Lo Celso because his stock is high right now, because we have Kulusevski, because we have Donnelly, because we have Son and Johnson and Richarlison, because Barcelona are interested. I would wait until the end of the January window because we need him through the stretch. But if we can sell Lo Celso, we got a game on the 31st. That's annoying. If we can sell Lo Celso on, you know, on the 30th, get him through the next couple of games.
Oh man.
I think that would be a good use of him because his stock is high right now. He's playing the best football he's played for Spurs in a long time. Immediately sell. Because you don't know what, you know, his availability is a significant issue and his role is the one in which we have the best depth. I think we should be trying to provoke a market, make Barcelona activate some more levers or whatever. And get some money for Lo Celso to invest elsewhere.
So this was a quote from Lo Celso post-match. He said, I think the team is on the right track. I'm just really happy and enjoying this new era at the club with my teammates, and I feel more and more settled. I think the coach has got the most out of all the players because he has a clear playing style that we love, me especially, and we've always shown our best side and had chances to win it even when we've lost.
Yeah,
Nathan A. Clark, sell him immediately. Get this man out of my club.
Oh, I love hearing from several players now how much playstyle matters to them. Yeah. How much Ange makes his players fall in love with his approach to football. How much that motivates players. And I would sell Lo Celso if a good offer came in this window.
I wouldn't sell him this window. I think I was in favour of selling him this window because I thought he wanted to go. But after hearing he settled, I think the summer is the right time to move him on. But I do think I agree with you. It's the right time to sell him because, like you say, we've got Maddison, we've got Kulusevski. We'll probably have signed Gallagher or someone of a similar profile. We've got Donnelly coming through. We've got Alfie Devine coming back from loan. There's plenty of attacking midfield options there. And yeah, I do think a player that we can only rely upon to be fit for half the season who has significant value in Spain is a player worth cashing in on,
yeah,
for sure.
I don't fall into this kind of trap of propaganda like you, Windy. So I would quite happily sell him. But I think the difference between like him, Kulusevski, and then Maddison is I just think Maddison opens up the pitch more for us. He's one-footed as well, but he's not kind of that one-footed like the other two. I think he gives us more in build-up, definitely more in long-range passing, and he'll just do different passes compared to Kulusevski. I like Kulusevski in the middle, but I don't think he's quite there yet to be. He's a great rotation option, but he's not there yet as a starter.
I really agree with that point about Maddison. I think he will use his weaker foot more than Kulusevski and Lo Celso will, but also he uses all parts of his strong foot, and I think that opens up many more passing angles. I think there's an argument that James Maddison is our best player, to be honest. Certainly he's in the top three, and he will elevate us significantly when he's back. I think he was absolutely outstanding at the beginning of the season and was really making us tick. The thought of him being back in the team at the end of the month is a very, very exciting prospect now that a lot of the other players have improved and we've clicked into this style. God, we're going to have such a strong end to the season this year. All these players coming back and, you know, yes, they've been out for a while, but I think I'm just very excited about the fact that they've come back and they've rested. They might have had injuries, but the minutes aren't in their legs and they'll be nice and fresh and good to go. And God, we're going to be a hell of a team to watch.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork, and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs. We love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.